Welcome everyone back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network, and I am joined on this fine Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you, my friend?
I'm so good.
Are we? I mean, this is. It's been a lot. We coaching search, the football transfer portal. Mm-hmm. End of the basketball season, football spring practice, and basketball.
Oh, and transitioning to an entirely new network.
So back in the day, and I would say not even within a couple of years ago, we actually, you know, there was some time where you and I could have a little time off. And now we just transition right into the main recruiting period for high school football.
Yeah, no, legitimately, the time to take time off is basically like 2 weeks in early July, and that's about it. There's really not a whole lot of other time.
But we can't go at the same time.
No. We've got
all those days when we used to just vacation together, you and I. We can't do that.
So true. In the south of France, who can forget?
Who can?
So it's been wet and wild, and it's been a lot of fun. Before we get too deep into everything else, right now, if you are listening to this and you are not a subscriber to Bruin Report Online, you should be, because right now, $1 for 4 months gets you access to everything, our message boards, all of our wonderful content, all of the breaking news, all of the analysis of basketball transfer portal, the football program. Football recruiting is about to get hot and heavy, and we're going to get into that a little bit towards the end of the show. There's a lot going on over the next 4 months, including the first 2 weeks of fall camp, getting you primed for the season. So 4 months for $1, hard to beat it. Get in now, Bruin Report Online, On3. Go in there, do it. We have a lot to talk about today, Tracy. we actually do. So there is football spring ball that is ongoing. They're about halfway through now. I think they're at 7 practices, and they're doing 15 if you count the spring game, so we'll call it halfway. So we want to talk about that. We want to talk about football recruiting, which is looking pretty good, and there's some signs that it's going to be looking even better. And then we want to talk about, obviously, the basketball transfer portal, where things are headed with everything there. So we wanted to start with football, though. Because we are first 7 practices in the books, and I want to start with this, Tracy.
Okay, Dave.
Have you ever seen a more energetic head coach and a more involved head coach in a practice than Bob Chesney?
You know what? That's not fair. I haven't actually gone out to other practices, but if you're comparing him to my small sample size of UCLA coaches and a few other scattered practices of other programs. Well, no, Dave. I mean, we're going to put this up in a story today, but because I don't think we've ever taken a football, UCLA football Twitter post and made one story from it, because it's Coach Chesney mic'd up. And it is phenomenal. And here's the thing too. I mean, obviously he knows he's mic'd, he knows he's on camera, so he might be, you know, putting on a little, but we've been there when he's not mic'd up, and this is what he does. I mean, he probably didn't even know. After a while, he probably didn't even realize he had the mic on. Dude is in the middle of it. He's got energy. I mean, after a while, you got to think the players are saying, is this guy real? Is he real?
So there was this, just to speak to that, because he was mic'd up. It was Saturday's practice that he was mic'd up. On Tuesday, before they'd posted this video, at one point, the backup kicker, Orozco, he misses a couple of kicks. And it's like, you know, middle of practice. Now, Tracy, your son was a kicker. How many times would you say the head coach pulled him aside for 2 full minutes in the middle of practice to maybe give him some tutelage on how to, you know, work out his plant foot?
I would say that was almost probably never.
I would
if you're talking the head coach, never.
I would say definitively never. I've never seen a head coach, I think, speak to a kicker during practice. Bob Chesney takes this guy aside and is literally mimicking the steps, walking him through it, talking him through it, watching him do it, then saying, no, do it this way for like 2 full minutes in the middle of practice.
Maybe Bob Chesney was a kicker. I'm going to look it up right now.
He was a special teams guy, but nonetheless, not something that is typical. Yeah, it's if you haven't watched it, we will be posting it later today, but it's pretty insane. I mean, it's just like the things he's saying to these guys, like, I mean, just you can see this interaction with him and Sayer West where he's like, you're going to be thinking about me when I'm 90, 100, something like that. And just know it's the best day of my life. You know, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Every day is the best day of my life. And you can see Sayer just being kind of like, okay. All right.
Dude. Like Sayer's heard this before.
Yes. Yes.
He's all, I know. This day is just like it was 2 years ago. It's the same thing.
And it's totally unfair. But like watching that, I'm like, are all these like it? So I went and I found Deshaun's from fall camp last year.
No, you didn't.
And no, they're not all like this. Not all at all. Because like in the midst of all the like rah-rah stuff, Chesney's giving like detailed tutelage on like gap assignments and stuff to all these players, and I don't know, it's really something else. And I would say, like, you know, we've watched now 7 practices. This coming Saturday is going to be the first one that's closed to the media, but I would say it's kind of mirrored in the energy level and intensity of practice so far. Like, it is an extension of kind of what Chesney was showing in that video, where it's just like very energetic, very intense, and seemingly, I mean, practices can be a little dog daisy sometimes, but seemingly pretty fun. Like, I mean, we've all sat through, well, not we all, but we have sat through a lot of UCLA practices that looked like a slog many times over the years. None of them have really had that feel yet. And yeah, some of it's the new car smell and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, maybe they'll settle into some sort of thing lower than this. But so far, I mean, it's been, from an energy level, the best, you know, 7 practices of spring, of April, that I can remember.
Yeah, it's a practice which is very well conceived. We brought this up before. They will break out of stretching and then go run a few drills and then go back to stretching, because stretching gets monotonous. And he's understanding, let's throw in a little energy to the stretching. So there's little subtleties, little nuance. If you notice in a lot of, well, y'all wouldn't notice, but Dave and I have noticed in some of the drills and even the team periods, Coach Chesney has, where he is in the practice, he can access the middle of the field in a matter of seconds and say, compete. And everyone rallies around him, as opposed to the head coach is off on the side or on team periods is way down at the end of the field. He is ready to step right into the middle of the field, and he's got everyone surrounded around that. That is has to be by design, because that's really effective. It makes his whole team provide him this energy where he moves just overall to begin with, but then he moves the team to the next field. It's that right there, what it does in bringing energy to the practice is something I've never seen, and I think it has to be done by concept.
And that's all well and good. Energy level is important, and we do like it. But people want to know, what's this team going to be like? And again, we've been able to watch 7 practices. So I think more than last spring, more than last fall camp, we've got a better idea of what this team is going to look like. And here's the conversation we were having just before we started talking, which is, can we start to make some guesses about this depth chart? Because we were told before spring ball started, hey, the depth chart isn't going to be real until maybe the end of spring. But like, there's degrees of real. And, you know, the question is, are we starting to see some things with consistency that make us go, And I would say on the offensive line, on the offensive line, there's a couple. There's first, pretty consistently now, Riley Robel has been the first string center. They had some Derek Osmond. Derek Osmond got rolled up on Saturday, but even before that, Riley Robel was the first string center most of the time. Like most of the time, he was the guy working with Nico Iamaliava. Eugene Brooks is mostly with the first string. And we've heard Bob Chesney talk up Julian Armella enough at this point, both before practices started, then during practice, then even in that mic'd up video talking him up, that one looks also like something that could happen. And then there's another guy at right tackle who's kind of weirdly consistently been with the first string through seven practices, and that is redshirt freshman, JMU transfer, JD Rayner. Those four seem like they're kind of trending towards at least in the rotation, would be my guess.
Yes. There are some slight caveats. Sam Yoon has not practiced. Coach Chesney did talk him up in our interview, about a month ago. I think Robel will probably still beat him out come fall, just because of the comfort level being a JMU transfer. So I just wanted to have to throw that in. Eugene Brooks, I think you said, Dave, if he appeared with the ones 3 days in a row, and I think we're running on two now. So we're
once that is, I'm going to start saying the depth chart is pretty firmed up.
He's going to be a right tackle the next day, just to throw us off.
Just
and I get all this, and he Coach Jesse does seem to be slightly enamored of Julian Armella, which I see. He's got size, he has energy, he's got a lot of experience. He started
good athlete.
So I could maybe see that. I think there might be some people who could compete with that. JD Rayner, though, at right tackle. I mean, we really need to watch him a bit to see if this is valid. Wow, that's phenomenal, because he's going to be a redshirt freshman. Yeah, I mean, a starter at right tackle for, you know, 3 years would be great. But we got to see if that's legit. And then left tackle, Jordan Davis has been nicked up. So I think he was there one day with the ones. I think was with the twos yesterday, but he's been out a little. And it's been Mac Indestad who's probably taken the most.
Jensen Somerville's taken a lot.
And maybe Jensen Somerville too. I'd have to think Jordan Davis is going to eventually plug in there. You know, there's also, you know, this has to be said, and this just isn't for UCLA. There's also guys who, you know, got a decent amount of money of NIL money to transfer. And while you want to start your best guy, you're paying money for this guy, and it's kind of almost predisposed a little that because you're paying him that amount, he should get that position, right? And I think there's a little bit of that maybe with Jordan Davis. He's listed at 6'5", 305. 6'5" might be a little bit of a stretch. This offensive line's huge, so when they're all lined up, he might look a little bit smaller. But he's got long arms. He's shown, when I watch him in drills, he's got athleticism. I got to think he eventually – we got a long way to go. We got halfway through spring and then all of fall camp. I think it ends up being Jordan Davis.
Yeah. And then there's – I mean, and also like on the interior, Carter Sweezy has also been with the ones a fair amount. And as much as they talk of Julian Armella, Sweezy, just like Robel, has, you know, scheme familiarity, having come from JMU. So what I'm getting at is, it does seem like there's a decent amount of depth being built. If you operate under the assumption that Robel and Sweezy especially can play at this level, which I am generally okay assuming, because they were on a very good JMU team, and they started and they, you know, competed with Oregon and actually moved the ball on them. So I'm willing to concede that. But it, you know, and this is what you would expect with 22 plus guys in the room this spring, that they would be able to, you know, pull out maybe seven or eight guys who could really play. And it's, I would say, trending in that direction. Not willing to say anything definitively at this point, but it looks like it's trending that way.
I think we've got to really watch right tackle, because I think that might, JD Rayner might be there, because he's probably legitimately good. We haven't got enough. I mean, it's hard to watch offensive line from where we are, even given all the access.
He moves really well. He's got that well. Former tight end background. He's an athlete. He doesn't have a ton of mass. Like, I wouldn't.
Pretty smallish.
Yeah.
So I think that 280 is probably accurate.
280, 285 is probably right on the button. So, you know, we'll see.
You think a guy like Indistad would probably end up competing there? You'd probably think Hall Schmidt, Katie Arnold, who has looked
okay.
Looked pretty good. I mean, I've been kind of impressed just by watching. And then Johnson Somerville, if he's earned some time at left tackle, when you're trying to get your best five on the field, you'd think you might want to move him to right tackle just to get your best five. So there's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of competition there at right tackle.
Agreed. So offensive line, that's obviously one where I would say we're starting to see maybe the beginnings of some depth forming. Continuing on offense, at running back, for me, the most impressive guy this spring has been Javian Thomas. If you remember, everyone, if you kind of throw out last season, just as like basically it was a disaster from the jump for basically everyone on the entire team. Javian Thomas was really, really well regarded coming out of Cal. Really fast. He had taken over that year for Jaden Ott, who was hurt for much of that season and was easily their best running back over Ott. And yeah, it was a hurt year for Ott, but even when healthy, he was the best running back. He's really, really fast. And I think what we've seen this spring, and again, big caveat, it's spring. And only one of these practices has been fully live, but they're getting him the ball in space. You know, he's attacking on swings and that sort of stuff, but he's looked the most impressive. Like, he's looked like he has the most ability to be a game breaker. Wayne Knight's also been good. He had a really, really nice run the other day where he cut back across the field and beat everyone to the edge. You know, he's got, obviously no one is Maurice Jones-Drew, but he's got that same kind of size where he's just like kind of built like a little bowling ball, can get those little legs turning. And Anthony Woods. But I would say for me, Javian Thomas has been probably the most impressive of the three.
And why that's really, really encouraging for me. You've got Wayne Knight, who's coming in from JMU, who was, you know, what did he run for? 1300 yards. Anthony Woods, who we thought coming out of last season was probably the best running back. And then Javian Thomas is emerging in spring looking the best. So that's really what you don't want is just one guy who looks good and everyone else you aren't sure about. I've been impressed with Dylan Lee.
Yeah.
Too. The guy's big and he moves well for how big he is. And then one of your favorite guys, Carson Cox, is still there. And then a guy who's been getting a lot of snaps and obviously has the respect of the team and the coaches, and that's Troy Liegbeer, who we haven't seen in a long time because he's been injured.
Yeah.
But he is like, you got to see, he represents the program very well, I'd say, just by how he carries himself on the field. So we thought running back going into spring was going to be one of the strongest positions groups, and I think it's held up. Now we move on to your favorite group, I think, and that's the wide receivers.
Indeed. So first, what we've observed, Brian Rowe has probably looked the best of any of the receivers, and that is with the caveat that Leland Smith has been in and out of a black jersey for no contact for much of spring ball so far. But Brian Rowe, like from a what you're expecting with an SEC level transfer who played as an SEC freshman, Yeah, yeah. No,
I love it when he asks Chesney about him. He's like, his breath is taken away for like the yeah, Brian.
Yeah, no, he's a exceptional athlete, exceptional, and more of a burner than I expected, but just the body control, the, you know, just kind of like a dancer out there.
And as our friend TM observed in practice yesterday, was kind of the star of the practice.
Yes. Yeah. Huge catches. He's been the number one guy from our observation. Two things I've heard are Mikey Matthews has had a very nice spring. And then I've also heard there's a lot of good buzz about Landon Ellis. Again, with those two guys, haven't seen it as much, but we also aren't seeing all of practice. And there are a fair amount of team drills and one-on-ones that we don't see.
And what we saw before Leland Smith got nicked up, he was impressive. He was very impressive. It was almost effortless in his ability to get separation and catch the ball. And then who's flashed too was Aiden Mizell. Mm-hmm. We've seen him flash. And then who also has flashed is freshman Kenneth Moore has shown some speed and quickness. Yes. So feeling good there, Dave. And they've mentioned Samaj Morgan. He's got a few mentions. So, dang, that's they're – let's just say they have enough there to come away with, I think, a very effective receiver rotation.
They should. And I do want to shout out Jace Brown. We had been talking about him for a long time, like he's going to eventually be a tight end. Not so much. He looks like he's kind of maintained at about 200, good looking 200, 205, maybe even grown a little bit, like taller. He looks like a good 6'3", 6'3 and a half now. He looks physically really good. Yeah. So just somebody to keep in mind for the future. I'm not sure how much it'll impact this year, but, he looks like he'll be maybe a player someday.
Tight end. It seems like Noah Fox Flores is kind of stepping up to be the one pass catching tight end. The first option.
Yeah,
I
want to throw Braden Lofton in there just cause they have used him a little bit more lately. I've seen 85 out there doing a little bit more. So want to toss him into that mix, but yeah, I think Noah Fox Flores has been the primary, movement tight end is what I would call him. And then Josh Pfeiffer, he's always in there with the ones. So very clearly they're going to be using him a lot, but he is a blocking tight end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say some combination of those three right now, with the caveat that Harry Lodge is still yet to arrive on campus. But yes, those three. And then I will say we've seen a lot of Stevie Amar. I know this is one area where they have rotated a lot of guys through the ones, twos, and threes. Like they're not doing repeat reps, and they do have a lot of tight ends. But we have seen a lot of Stevie Amar.
Yes.
All right. So and then quarterback. I want to say Ty Diefenbach had the edge to enter spring ball from everything we heard. I would say there's been no real clarity between Ty Diefenbach and Madden Iamaliava for the backup job at this point.
No clarity. I'd say our eyeballing, I'd say Diefenbach has a slight edge at this point.
I'd agree, but I don't think it's profound at this point. I don't think either one is pulled away. But frankly, I don't think Nico Iamaliava's had a great spring either. I think it's a lot of learning curve stuff going on with the quarterbacks.
True.
All right. So shifting gears to the defense. Here is another area where I think at some positions we're getting some decent clarity on the depth, particularly in the defensive backfield. And I would say up front in the front seven, they're doing pretty heavy rotations still, but there's a little bit we can draw. Let's start from the back, though, because that's where we have the most clarity. Teo Johnson and Cole Martin are going to start at safety.
I think that's probably the most certain thing that we know. Yeah.
That's the most certain thing on this entire team, aside from Nico being the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
The depth behind them, I think, is maybe a little bit more up in the air, but I would say Tashawn James is definitely going to be your more than likely third safety. We've seen Ty Lee work alongside him. The thing is Malik Hartford is still in a black jersey, so we haven't seen him in team stuff. He could also factor into that mix as the fourth safety in the rotation, but the top three. And then what you'll also often see is whoever's at the starting nickel will often be kind of the fourth safety too. So, you know, it depends on what they do and how they like to work this and how much they like to integrate a box safety and, you know, kind of the nickel linebacker type deal and all that kind of stuff. But right now it looks like Teo Johnson, Cole Martin, and Tashawn James are pretty solid top three at safety.
Yeah, there's one kind of moving part here when we're talking about the nickel spot. I think DJ Barksdale has probably been slotted in there the most. We had penciled in Scooter Jackson coming into spring, but Scooter's been out there on the corner.
Before he was out this two practices this week. So right.
And before that, filling in at that cornerback spot for Rod Pleasant, who still hasn't come back completely, still working with the trainers, his offseason shoulder surgery. So that's something to consider too. When all these guys come back by fall, there's no way you can, if Roderick Pleasant is 100%, can't keep him off the field.
Right. I mean, so it's a question of, do you start Scooter over Dante or do you start him over DJ Barksdale?
Or do you plug him back into nickel? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said. Or yeah, so that's really something to watch. And that's kind of fun because there's a lot of talent right there. What we have seen is Aaron Williams getting some reps at nickel and looking pretty good. Like looking raw, needs to learn what he's doing, but making some plays. So kind of encouraging there.
We've seen him. We've seen Jameer Johnson also at that nickel spot. I think Chase Coleman has also done some stuff there. And that cornerback with Jackson and Pleasant out, it's been mostly Robert Stafford stepping in alongside Dante Lovett as the opposite corner. So again, you can start to see some depth forming. Osiris Gilbert has also worked in there a bunch. So I would say, you know, kind of assuming Scooter Jackson stays at corner, your top five corners are going to be something like Scooter Jackson, Roderick Pleasant, Dante Lovett, Osiris Gilbert, and Robert Stafford in some combination, which is not too dissimilar from what we expected pre-spring, except if Scooter does indeed stay at corner.
Yes.
Okay, so that is... do you want to say any more about...
No. I was just saying that that's fun to talk about because that's a strength. The second
such half. A strength. So let's work forward a little bit for an area where I think we're both still kind of, I wouldn't say totally skeptical, but a little bit more... Okay, we'll have to see how this works out, is linebacker. So we're going to consider these the two legitimate linebacker spots, not the ones that are masquerading as edges. So that is the Mike and the Will. I think it's fair to guess at this point that Sammy Omosigo is a very, very likely starter, and then that there's a somewhat of a competition, but I would say Donovan Palat has the edge right now on Jalen Woods for the other starting spot.
Yeah, I believe so. I think it started out a little probably even, and what we've seen lately is Palat plugged in there more with the ones. Drew Spinogatti has been pretty consistent, gotten some time with the ones, but pretty consistent with the twos. He's probably the first guy I would think off the bench.
Yeah. Haven't seen a ton of, I mean, I've seen a lot of actually Matthew Muasau. Mone Malifu, I saw him in a little bit on Tuesday. Haven't seen a ton of Juju Walls, and haven't seen really any of Malachi Solei Tui. So we'll see on those guys. But yeah, I mean, it seems pretty firm that it'll be Sammy Onsigo, Jalen Woods, and Donovan Palat in some pretty firm rotation with Spinogatti coming in sometimes. In today's game with the nickel stuff, you don't actually play that many linebackers in your base defense. Usually four or five is pretty good unless you've got injuries or guys dinged up. So I would.
And having said that, still worried a little bit about this position.
100%. And just because we haven't seen Donovan Palat start games, we haven't seen him really play major, major snaps. Sammy Omosigo was not a starter at Oklahoma, as we've said repeatedly. Jalen Woods started some games last year, but you know, has not necessarily been a star at any point. So I think there's still some stuff to work out here and still some things to figure out heading into fall camp, or heading into the back half of spring for that matter. Okay, so that is the linebacker core. And then The defensive front, I think we're seeing some clarity take shape at the edge positions. And then I think we're seeing a lot of rotation on the interior that's kind of hard to fully suss out. So beginning with the edges, first we've got that edge slash Sam slash Jack, whatever you want to call it, role, where we've seen a whole host of guys, but it's been a pretty established order. Scott Taylor is going to be your starter there. And then it looks like Cole Cogshell is one of the major factors behind him alongside Anthony Saka. And those are the kind of, those are the kind of key pieces there. Scott Taylor, though, being pretty firmly the first string guy on that side. And then on the other side, which we're calling more of a true defensive end role, but frankly, there's enough squishiness here that sometimes Sahir West is almost in a dropping role, like that it's not entirely dissimilar, but there obviously Sahir West is going to be the starter. We've seen a lot of Dallin Hevea. Aiden Gabara has been there, but he's also been inside sometimes.
Playing mostly inside from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because he was listed at like 255, Dave, but he looks bigger now. I mean, he's got to be 270-ish. But he has been more at that three technique more often, I think.
Yeah, and we've even seen Sahir in there too. So I think this role is going to have some versatility, but I do think Gabara is more of your interior guy among those two. And then Dallin Hevea, we've seen him a lot, and we've seen Amir Washington a lot. And
Amir inside a lot too. So yeah, you're 100%. Right. That position they're moving around, I think.
And then there's another thing to consider here, which is that Ryan McCullough, who's probably not going to be back for the spring, but we were anticipating him being a factor here. But he might end up being a factor more at the Sam edge spot because we didn't know everything about this defense heading into spring. And so we had plugged him in as just one of the quote edges. But he was a linebacker edge at Cal. So it might make sense for him to be on the other side now that we've kind of seen this defense a little bit more.
Yeah.
So edge positions, I would say generally I'm feeling pretty decent about. I think they've got a lot of bodies here. I think they've got a lot of pretty good talent. I like Scott Taylor a lot. I like Sahir West a lot. And Cole Cogshell, I don't see any reason to move off of our projection for him from before the season last year, which is that he's probably going to be a talented edge at some point. So I don't mind this depth chart at all. At the edges, I should say.
Yeah, I think just because you have the headliner, Sahir West, and then the young guy who's flashed that you can be excited about in Scott Taylor, and then some talent. I mean, Cole Cogshell came in as probably the higher ranked guy, and he looks good physically. And then like Dallin Hevea has had some moments. So feeling good about that right now.
Defensive tackle, I don't know what to think. They've rotated a lot of guys. I would say Tyson Ford has been pretty consistently with the first string, but so there's two things going on with defensive tackle, which are different from a lot of other positions, which is one, they've got a lot of bodies here that none of them were established starters coming in like at all. And none of them were established starters really at their own places before this. So there's no real pecking order. And two, defensive tackle in general is a very, very rotational position. Like guys who start play like, I don't know, 35-40% of the snaps. And you end up needing, you know, five guys pretty firmly rotating between these two spots at minimum. So with those caveats, the guys we've seen the most are Tyson Ford, Daryl Dengohi, Maxwell Roy,
Aiden Gabara.
Aiden Gabara, and then probably AJ Fuimaiono, but we've seen a little bit of Gavin Blum. Gavin Blum, again, is another guy who I think is like kind of in that three tech role where he's almost in the defensive end group sometimes.
And Amir Washington.
So there's clearly some mixing and matching here going on based off of, you know, I think passing downs versus running downs, like that whole thing where, you know, for us, when we're assessing it from watching it, it can be hard because, you know, we don't have the practice plan. So we don't know, okay, we're not matching personnel. We're not matching, okay, You know, they're running a third and nine right now. So now it's Amir Washington at defensive tackle. We're just looking at the, you know, personnel rotations because there's only so much we can do during a practice. So I'm trying to think, like, what is their base versus what is their nickel versus what is their nickel passing down stuff? And right now, I think base is Tyson Ford and Daryl Dengohi. I think they've got passing down packages where they will move in one of Aiden Gabara or Sayer West or Amir Washington. And then I think they've got heavier sets where they'll have Gavin Blum as one of the outside guys. They'll have heavier sets where it's Aiden Gabara and Sayer West as the two starting ends. And that's like goal line stuff. The question for me is, do they have that space eating, you know, defensive tackle who can, you know, basically take on a double team, stop the run more or less on his own, like can do that kind of Jay Towia stuff where you just fully disrupt a series on your own by being just big and strong and physical. And that's where I just don't know at this point. The two candidates there for me are Tyson Ford and Maxwell Roy, and I haven't seen enough from either of them. And yeah, it's one padded practice at this point, so it's hard to say. Neither of them have looked necessarily the part at this point, but we'll see. I mean, it could continue that way. We're going to see probably more padded practices, but I think it's still kind of the question mark at this point is whether or not those two guys can fill in as kind of that firm defensive tackle role. But other than that, I mean, I think, if we're going to do you want to get into special teams, Tracy?
Only because, I mean, it might be a strength. Let's go with that. Sure. I mean, Bateen Bagani has looked good. He hit a 57-yarder.
Yep.
So I think that's the field goal. You know, it feels really good to be in spring and thinking you have, like, a kicker who could be in the top three in the Big Ten. So that feels good. Have you seen much from punting, Dave?
No. Yeah. I would say Curtis Gerund has looked fine. But we honestly, a lot of times when they're doing punting, they're throwing the ball to just get a feel. No, not a whole lot of full field punting at this point.
And then I don't think we've seen any kickoff return. They must be doing that in the period when we're out, but we have seen some punt return and there's a lot of guys back there.
Yeah. They've got a lot of options. They're running, I think they're just trying to get a lot of guys different reps because there'll be sometimes 15 guys just kind of hanging out with the two punt return lines. But I mean, I think some clarity here, Mikey Matthews, Wayne Knight, Samaj Morgan, I do think are still kind of the three main guys there, but we're seeing Jace McMillan. We're seeing Jackson Meehan. We're seeing a bunch of different guys work out there. So I would say there's some positions where we're seeing some clarity and then there's some where it's still kind of a free for all and punt return. I don't know if it's a complete free for all. I still expect Mikey Matthews to be a key factor there, but they're definitely trying out a lot of guys.
So I think, so we went through the depth chart. I think the overall main, there's some takeaways. The offense has not clicked, I'd say. A lot of timing issues in the passing game. You know, they're installing the playbook. So as you said, you would say Nico has not looked particularly great. Hasn't looked bad, but hasn't looked great. But we're going to attribute that all to getting used to a new offense. The passing game isn't there. Running game has looked okay. Again, though, you got to say, is it just because the running game's good or the rushing defense isn't very good? That's always the issue when it comes to spring. That's kind of the takeaway. The talent that we thought was going to be there at certain position groups is there. Probably a little bit more encouraged by offensive line, I guess, because of some guys that look like that staff likes, like Julian Armella and JD Rayner, probably some guys that we weren't really completely thinking would be in the top five. So that's encouraging. But Dave, the main takeaway, seriously, is just not Coach Chesney, but just the energy from practice. It is by far the most, even more energetic than Morris practices. The way the whole thing is designed to keep energy on the field, you can see, I mean, it hasn't hurt that there have been dozens, if not hundreds, of recruits attending practice. You know, we're talking to all of them, and they're all saying, the very first thing they say is, wow, the energy at practice, it's a whole different culture. So I think that's really the biggest takeaway from spring so far.
Yes, and the other big takeaway is that they've had a ton of recruits on campus, and kind of bleeding into our next discussion topic, UCLA football recruiting is kind of popping off lately. Currently, the 25th ranked class, they've picked up commitments in recent days from safety Pole Moala, who's a four-star, as well as tight end Zach Fairs, who's a four-star. And they joined fellow four-star Colton McKibben, who kind of was a surprise commitment at the end of March. That's three four-star commitments before official visits have even started for UCLA. Additionally, highly regarded defensive lineman Montana Toilolo from Modern Day, Michael Farinas, the wide receiver, Jackson Hill, who was another commitment in April. He's the offensive tackle from Chaminade that we saw this past weekend. We both liked him. And then Mike Davis, the Modern Day linebacker. But there are that's already looking better than you might have anticipated for the start of a tenure and this early on before official visits have begun. And they've got irons in the fire with a lot of dudes. I would just say right now, like, I think people wrote off the possibility of having like a very, very good class in year one for Chesney. I mean, is it going to be top 10? No, but is it going to be top 25? Is it going to be top 20? I think they're definitely in the conversation for that. The benchmark to getting a top 15 class these days is about 10 four-stars. They have three already, and they're in the mix for a lot more. So yeah, it's looking pretty good, Tracy.
Yeah, there's a few, definitely a few things here. Like you said, they've got some four-star irons in the fire, probably leading for four-star quarterback Dane Weber, just because a few of his other options might be off the table. Guys like Duvet Williams, Blake Wong, there's an offensive lineman from Colorado coming in to watch practice on Saturday, Jackson Roper.
Yep.
Four-star guy who I think just came off a visit
to, I think, Ohio State.
How often has this happened? Comes off a visit from Ohio State. And I think Michigan, there was some other, you know, elite college football team that's really hot on him. And we're hearing good buzz about his interest in UCLA. So that kind of stuff is happening. I'm really always just concerned with offensive line. I'd like to bring in 4 to 5 freshmen every year. Like you said, commitment from Jackson Hill, solid offensive tackle prospect. A guy like Jackson Roper would just almost put this over the top already, but we saw Lex Malangi, who we think they're doing really well with right now, an interior guy who I don't know if he lost a rep at Under Armour last Sunday. Jacoba Doyle, a 4-star who they're doing well with. Lincoln Maggio, Amazia Ciali. Not even ranked yet, but massive dude. You could see that there's a lot there just in terms of raw material to work with. Hasn't played, you know, doesn't really know how to play yet. Very promising, raving about UCLA. The thing about the class, too, I mean, it's ranked 25th right now. Let me look this sucker up. And if you look at all the teams ahead of them, Dave, answer me this question. Is there any other team that has a new coach that's had a losing record for 2 years that's in the top 25?
Cal, right above them.
Did Cal have a losing record both years?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't think so. New coach would be Penn State. I mean, come on, Penn State. They should immediately bounce back. They're at 23. UCLA has more four stars right now than Penn State. So this is what we're trying to say is Coach Chesney didn't have a lot to work with coming in to start recruiting the high school 2027 class. I mean, there are two things at work here. What he is doing with his recruiting staff and his coaches is just phenomenal. But it's also what we've said over the years that if you have someone who can really recruit and he's got energy and he knows how to recruit, and even if he just wins a little or not even yet, like Chesney has done, there's a lot to sell at UCLA if you do it well, and that's what he's doing. I mean, in that mic'd up video, and he said this a number of times, where else would you want to be? Where else would you want to be? Anywhere on earth, where would you want to play football? And that's kind of been their mantra. Where else would you want to play college football? So it's working. They're utilizing all the advantages that UCLA has, and there's finally a coach who's actually doing it without ever playing a game, without one win. Imagine this formula and all of this recruiting energy and effort if they actually win a little in 2026. It's really fun just to think about.
It is. It is. And it's, yeah, it feels like, early Mora-esque almost.
And here's one more thing. Sorry, Dave. The way this cycle works now is everyone commits by July. Well, not everyone. Most people commit by July. They take their official visits. It's really strange. All you old schoolers, I know you're still getting used to this. But they still will not have signed until December. So if UCLA puts together a great season, it could be flip season, come fall, which would be even more fun.
Yeah. And Brandon wrote about it in the Buzz yesterday, but UCLA is also being NIL forward. And you can read all the details about that in his recruiting Buzz from yesterday.
I mean, just a hint, Brandon is hearing from recruits that, wow, UCLA is like right out there at the top of with their NIL offer.
Yep.
Which is kind of shocking.
Kind of big deal.
So there you go.
So
that's all fun.
That is football recruiting. But
if you want to hear more,
go to Bruin Report Online. $1, 4 months. $1 for 4 months. It is not just football recruiting time. It is, in fact, the most important time in basketball recruiting. Right now, the transfer portal season is in full swing. UCLA hosted a few official visits this week, including this past weekend, hosting Jalen Petty and Luke Wilson. This week, hosting John Blackwell and Matt Abel and Robinson, Stink Xavier. Robinson. What's Xavier. His actual first
Stink.
Name?
Let's just go with Stink. Xavier.
I didn't want to call him Stink Robinson. I wanted to say Xavier.
I think he's used to it now.
Probably. Working in reverse order, Robinson was the Butler guard, freshman, rising sophomore. Matt Abel was from NC State, the wing. John Blackwell, obviously, is the Wisconsin guard. Jalen Petty was the Texas Tech guard, also a freshman this past season. And then Luke Wilson was the Appalachian State center. UCLA picked up a commitment from Jalen Petty. He joins Philip Jovich, the Auburn forward, and Sergei Makira, the Mississippi State forward, as the three transfer commitments at this point. We're anticipating UCLA will take a center, and we're anticipating UCLA will take another guard, wing, whatever type. And that's kind of at minimum. They may take two guards. We'll see how this all shakes out. Two guard slash wing types. But right now, everyone's kind of wondering, after John Blackwell came, whether or not UCLA is going to land him. And I think it is fair to say right now that UCLA obviously still has a chance. And Tracy and I are both skeptical.
First off, and I know because Dave and I want to get some definitive information, but it's almost near impossible. Like, you know, our boy Yoda asks us on the phone, Tracy, which transfers do you think UCLA is going to get? What's 50-50? It's just not possible. It's so far in this cycle, we literally have heard from some sources that, these guys, there was like a package deal that was going to happen. Yep. We were almost told it was sewn up for a few days. We were getting right. We were getting prepared like a commitment stories. Wake up one day. Oh no, that's out. I mean, this is when you do high school recruiting, it's years over the course of years.
Yeah.
This is now over the course of 2 weeks. So
a 6 month high school recruitment now happens in a day and a half. So
you can imagine how fast this all happens and how, I'm using the F word, how fluid it is. And just not fluid, there are so, the moving parts contribute to the fluidity, because it's a lot of this is based on NIL. If they get this guy and he's a big time guy, all their NIL, a lot of their NIL is going there. So then they can only afford this guy and this guy. If they don't get him, they can then afford this guy or this guy. It is a crazy way to recruit. It, as you can imagine, the staff is, I mean, their heads are exploding, and every staff is going through this. So when you ask us, like, you can't say that. If they say, like Dave said, we're skeptical about Blackwell. If they don't get Blackwell, they might be able to get other guys that are probably still a little bit on hold. If they get Blackwell, he's going to take a lot of their NIL, and that's that. This is the way this all works. Everyone is clamoring for a big-time post, and I'm telling you, it's like even just pedestrian serviceable posts are going for $3 to $4 million of NIL. In a lot of ways, that would be hard to get, like a John Blackwell, the rest of the roster, and then a $4 million post.
Yeah,
you would probably be at like $20 million worth of NIL.
I think it was Evan Maya who had a good story on this recently. But centers in this market are the most overpriced. Like from a value standpoint, like the equivalent value point guard, like say you've got them like all tier ranked, right? The equivalent tier level point guard is going for 70 cents on the dollar, and the center is going for 130 or 140 cents on the dollar. It's just there's wide disparities because, as everyone in life knows, when you're walking around on the street, 7 foot guys are hard to find. 6'1" guys are easy to find. And that's playing out in the transfer portal. And you may argue, and you may be right, you may be wrong, but you may argue that it's worth it then to overspend on a center. But from a value, if you're looking for value for your dollar, maybe not. But if you're looking for how do you build the most competent team, maybe it is. It's really like this is the kind of stuff where it gets really heavily into in a non-salary cap sport where you have your own internal cap. Where do you spend your money to construct the best team? Can you construct a team that is very good that doesn't have an ideal center? I would argue yes, it does require a nuanced construction. I think Tracy would be more on the maybe.
I'm market based though. I mean, I could talk in a vacuum and say, yeah, I'd like this guy, but the guys that are going for $3 to $4 million, I'd rather put my money into a really athletic wing.
Yeah, and get the $1.5 million guy who's not.
You know, go crazy, Dave, and spend two.
Yeah.
And get a guy who could maybe, you know, get six rebounds a game.
Maybe. But it's a crazy market. And yeah, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, everyone should have anticipated this. I'm like, yes. But also the market, just like from what I know from a variety of different schools, and like I talked to a bunch of people who are reporters for different schools, the market's gone up. Like, it's not like, oh, they should have anticipated 1.25x times what it was last year. The market's gone up 80% again, and it did last year too. And so, yes, you can say that you can anticipate that. It's one thing to anticipate it, and it's one thing to have, like, this is unsustainable. Like, just, I mean, it, no market should be going up 80% every single season. With the makeup of this market, it doesn't make any sense. And the reason it doesn't make any sense is because, and this is, I know people are going to say I'm carrying water. I'm not. This is just the reality. You've got a few spenders at the very top of the market who have people supporting them who have blank checks. And those people are being very irresponsible with what they're doing at the top of the market. And because of that, it's going to really hurt the sport at some level. It already has. But it makes it so that it's unsustainable at the mid-major level to even have a team. And at the, you know, lower end of the P4, it's getting there very quickly. And I'm not talking about UCLA there. UCLA is going to be fine. I mean, they're going to be in the, you know, mix of having
Santa Barbara, Long Beach State.
They're in real trouble. Yeah. Real trouble. And like even ones like, you know, there's some higher mid-majors that are going to be in real trouble. And so I just, it's a very, very stupid marketplace. And you know, if you want to say that, you know, Donovan Dent was closer to the top of the market last cycle, that amount, which I'm not going to get into, is now mid-level. Like that's a mid-level starter at best at a lot of schools now.
It's yeah. As you crazy. Said, 80% for him, just, y'all know the number, add 80%. So that's for a point guard. We're saying in this cycle, it's averaged an increase of 80%. Posts, 250%.
150. Yeah.
I mean, insane what it's done. So this is what all of these programs are trying to deal with. I think at this point, too, a lot of programs are just saying, F it. We're going over our budget. We'll find the money later. I think they have to do this. And we hear fans say, well, why don't they just not pay it? You know, that's not realistic. You have one guy, one coach who pays it. Now the market's set. You can't just say you can't collude and get everyone not to pay it. Actually.
And they should, be colluding. Even if it's illegal, all these schools should be, because the market is unsustainable. But the problem is it's a prisoner's dilemma. If you think you're colluding and you've agreed on this, but then the school X goes 300X or 300K above that or 500K above that, well, it's basically dark money. Like these are not publicly released contracts. So it's an impossible situation unless there is some governance, and there is no governance.
In basketball, there's a special caveat too. Take a guy like Diop, the ASU transfer. Let's just look at him. Y'all say UCLA should go out and get him. Let's say they don't get a John Blackwell. Go get Diop. Okay, so it's not just about that Diop wants $5 million plus. From what we're hearing, he wants it all in 100% rev share. Why someone would want that is rev share is guaranteed because it's paid from the school, not NIL, which some little slappy company over there on the side that's got to pay you, and you never know if they're going to have the money. If you noticed, what are the schools that Diop is now interested in? Gonzaga and St. John's. Dave, what's unique about those two schools?
Oh, Tracy, aside from them, I think both being religious and maybe Jesuit, they don't have football programs.
Ding, no football programs. So, you know, that I think it's $21.5 million that these schools can spend up to in rev share. Those two schools have no football program, so they can spend whatever the hell they want on basketball rev share. That's not what UCLA's got, that little old football program. So you've got to take this into consideration. All those schools that don't have football programs are going to massively benefit from how much rev share they can spend. And rev share for these recruits is a big thing. They want rev share over NIL all day long. So, I mean, UCLA, it's public knowledge. UCLA's rev share cap is, I think, $4.5 million. St. John's, I don't know. But even if it is, this is the other thing too. Let's say it's 7 or 8. There really is no cap. They can go all the way up to 21.5 million. They can just keep taking, if they find it in the athletic department, they can keep giving it to rev share for St. John's basketball. Incredible advantage. Incredible, incredible advantage. So you got to, Dave and I could talk for like 4 hours about all the nuances and everything that's going on here. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about UCLA. John Blackwell is probably the number one target at the moment. He's been staying in LA locally for a while because his agent is Todd Ramazar, who is LA based. Just came in for a UCLA official visit. We kind of broke the news that he will officially visit Duke and Illinois. A lot of people are making a big thing out of other schools being involved, like Louisville. Louisville's involved. Louisville has money. But right now we're hearing it's still probably the threats, and maybe leading are Duke and Illinois. Illinois is where his father went. Duke is Duke. So he takes those official visits. We've seen this movie. You know, it is going to be hard, I think, for UCLA. This is why Dave and I are skeptical, based on just, you know, all the skepticism that all his bros have built up through BBS, that UCLA stays on near or top of this recruitment. Maybe there's an attraction for him to stay in LA and stay close to his agent. That can be a factor at times. We're a little skeptical. Matt Abel, North Carolina State wing, watched a lot of him in games. He's only averaged 9-10 points a game. I really like him. Athletic kid, great all-around game, potential to be a really good defender, 6'6"-ish. Also a Todd Ramazar kid. Thinks was more preoccupied with going in the NBA draft, even though he's not on any NBA draft board. I think he, after his UCLA visit, he's coming around to realizing he probably is going to come back to college. Number of schools that are still involved with him, and he is going to take visits. So Blackwell and Abel, I mean, I think you're going to have to settle in, and this is going to be a bit of a waiting game. Xavier Robinson, really like him. If you have Perry and Petty in your backcourt as your starters, to add Xavier Robinson, athletic kid, can defend. Really like him as maybe the first guy off the bench to later, you know, in other seasons, move into a starting role. I think he has that capability. At the post, Luke Wilson from Appalachian State took his visit. Everyone is talking about all these other posts. I think it still looks very good for Luke Wilson. Don't want to go out on a limb, Dave, but you'd say that probably right now, if we had to guess at this moment, it would be Luke Wilson would be the most likely post that UCLA is going to take. But anything can happen. They miss on a number of guys. They might then turn around and say, hey, look, we got $4 million to give to a post. Unlikely. But anything can happen at this point. I personally would rather see them go all in on Abel who's going to cost you less, probably by a couple of million at least.
Yep.
Match him with Perry, Petty, then you're absolutely affording Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I like that team.
With I like it a lot.
Returning guys. Athletic, you are providing the athleticism we didn't see last year and potential defensive capability. I like that a lot. John Blackwell's big-time scorer. He wants to play some point guard to show his point guard versatility to the NBA. Iffy defender, probably has the potential. Didn't play a ton of he was a passable defender. Let's say that. I think Abel's a better fit for what Mick Cronin wants to do in his program. But this is just Dave and I talking.
So yeah, just us kids here. There's a lot to like about a roster that I'll put it this way, but I don't mean it this way, that doesn't include Blackwell. Like, there's a lot to like about a roster that is built with Jalen Petty, Matt Abel, Xavier Robinson, and Filip Jovic. Why? Because all four of those guys are good athletes who are freshmen rising into sophomores. All four of them. And what do we know about Mick Cronin? He's a developmental head coach. He makes pretty much everybody better, even guys who are not athletes. But when he has guys who are athletes who have the capability of being good defenders, he often turns them into very good defenders. And all four of those guys, I think, have the capability of doing so. Here's what I'll say is I don't think there's a lot of patience in the fan base for a year where they are not contending. And I do think that roster would maybe have, I think it's got a decent ceiling. I think it's got a lower floor than we've seen the last 2 years, because there's a chance it doesn't gel very quickly and that they're, you know, fighting to make the tournament by the end of the year. And I don't think there's any patience for that at this point. But this is the kind of roster I would have loved to see UCLA trying to build 3 years ago, after the final Jaime team, because it reflects an understanding of what Mick Cronin does very well, which is retain and develop. I don't know if there's the patience to do that at this point. I think that team does have some upside potential. It'll have a hole at center, like add Luke Wilson, say, but it's still got a hole at center, where there isn't an obvious, you know, this is a guy who can start and give you 9-6, obvious. But the other pieces are there for guys to develop and grow into, you know, bigger shoes and the whole thing. And that's not even factoring in Trent Perry, Joe Filon, guys who, you know, Joe Filon, like, he's a guy with another, it's like, these are the pieces of a core that could develop into something really cool in 2 years.
Yeah.
But is there going to be the patience in the fan base to do that for a year? And I think that's part of, I don't think it's a major motivating factor, but I think that's part of why you're seeing such a pursuit of John Blackwell, which is, oh, well, that's a guy who immediately raises your floor. And it does. But adding John Blackwell, I'm just thinking, who would I rather see, you know, growing and developing at the two next year? And I guess it wouldn't necessarily be at the two, because Jalen Petty might be the one. But do I want to see more of Jalen Petty, or do I want to see a lot of John Blackwell for a single season? And I kind of want to see Jalen Petty. I kind of want to see Matt Abel. Yep. I kind of want to see a Xavier Robinson. I want to see those guys. Yep. And that's me. I mean, I've been banging this drum for years now about, like, I think Mick Cronin's a developmental head coach, and I want to see him develop players. But I think that's a roster that, like, the last 2 years, for example, they've gone into March, and I think everyone's had the measure of the team pretty well set in their heads. They're pretty decent. They're not great. They're not going to win anything. We know this. Going into March. And yeah, there was the Adai Mara resurgence, but we all saw the way that was going too. We knew what the team was. This year's team may have, if they go into next year with Matt Abel, Jalen Petty, Xavier Robinson, Filip Jovic, Luke Wilson, yada, 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 they may have a worse record entering March next year. But I think a lot of people will have maybe a different impression of that team, because they'll see them grow over the course of the year and start to be able to see that upside. And so I don't even know necessarily what I'm arguing for here. I'm just saying, like, there's some pieces of this roster build that I think are kind of cool and potentially very interesting. I just wish it had happened 2 to 3 years ago.
I kind of know what you're saying. The way they're going about it this year, you like. And yeah, you would have liked to have seen it a couple of years. And you know what? You know what? Let's give perhaps a little bit of a difference is the addition of Max Feldman as the assistant general manager. So. I think he's, you know, when you're on a staff, you're not ever thinking, wow, I only got 1 year left. I mean, they're building this roster for the long-term haul. And I think Max Feldman has shifted this a little. He's finding young guys who could develop under Cronin who are athletes that can fit into what the kind of game that Cronin can optimize to make his teams the best they can be under his coaching. Whether that's too late or not, as I think Dave's almost trying to say, who knows? But I think if, and again, this might not happen this way. They might not get Matt Abel. They might have to pivot to someone else. This is changing at every, literally every, there were so many times we're told something and Dave and I say, oh, let's just wait. Let's wait like an hour. This is going to change, and it changes. And we're lucky we didn't report it.
Yep.
Just like, I'm just going to throw this out. Like Nick Kamenia, I said, he's the local kid and went to Duke. Now he's in the transfer portal, UCLA, and his people were talking, went up and down, looked like he might come back, looked like he wouldn't. He would be their seventh power forward, in my opinion. I said he's going to go to UConn more than likely, and everyone starts bemoaning it, saying all of these things. And I responded by saying, I don't think he fits into what they're trying to do for the roster next year. And someone says, well, if he can fit in at UConn and he's good enough for Hurley. Now, the way you've put together the roster for next year is if you can get all the, like, you can plug in Kamenia to a roster full of athletes if he's also slated to play the four. The four is kind of filled at UCLA right now. And even though he wants to play the three, he ain't a three. So he's not a fit for UCLA's program right now. They need, given where it is, they need athletes. And the way they're going, I think you would much rather have Matt Abel than Nick Kamenia on this roster for next year. So there's so many moving parts, and it's very easy to say, oh, if he's good enough for UConn, why isn't he good enough for you? It's just, that's not the way it works. You're building a roster, and there's so many elements. And now the big element is NIL. So everyone, Dave and I included, just take a deep breath. We still got a lot to go here. There's a player to be named later that Dave and I are both skeptical will ever see it happen, that UCLA will be able to recruit that player.
Here's what I'll say about the player to be named later. I think if he does go to, I think he's much more likely to be playing professionally somewhere next year than he is to be playing in college.
I think that's the way most people think. Yeah, that are even close to it and actually like know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, I think the player to be named later might enter an NBA draft combine and wow the crap out of everybody and end up a top.
But player. Who knows who that is?
Who knows who the player to be named later is in any real way?
Yeah,
we all could be the player to be named later.
So there it is, Dave. So I know this has been a roller coaster, guys, and hang in there with us. You know, we're trying to give you as much information as we can, without damaging UCLA's recruiting, without putting ourselves, you know, in a dangerous spot to where we say one thing and it turns around an hour later and it changed. I mean, this is tough for us, and we're trying to give you as much information as we can.
Do you know how many this guy could be committing stories we could have written in the last 2 weeks?
We had them all on the back end and now they're deleted.
Yes. There were at least four different guys.
There's still one, Dave.
There's still one sitting there, actually. I think that one will eventually be published, I think. I'm going to say
it's
that's
now. 60, so we have
68%
this
chance.
We have this story admin, and I don't know how many stories. There's like 30, 40 stories. It's on like page 6 now. That's how long ago we wrote that thing.
Oh yeah. Boy. Women's basketball, Tracy, is coming off a national championship. And they are still trying to fill out their transfer recruiting class. Some dominoes fell this week, but kind of the remaining irons in the fire, two primarily, Addie Brown, who is probably still going to visit Vanderbilt. She visited UCLA this week. She is the forward from Iowa State. She was 12 points, 9-ish rebounds a game. Very good player. She'd be a senior next year. So she's among the must-gets. And then Tilda Trigger, who's more of a center type. She, I believe, also visited this week. And from what we know, she is also looking at Washington. I've heard Maryland. She's NC State. She was also about 10 points and 7 rebounds a game last year. She's 6'6". So definite real size there. Those are two of the primary names we're still hearing for women's basketball. They were in the mix for Courtney Ogden. She committed to Michigan earlier this week. So I would say next year's team may be lacking a little bit right now. In proven scoring punch. But if they are able to land Trigger and Addie Brown, I think it's still going to be a pretty good team. It's not going to be one of the, you know, top five team all year like it was the last two seasons, but I think you can look and see that as like a top 10, top 15 type team.
Top 25, probably the way it is. They get Trigger and Brown, top 15, top 10, maybe. Both of them really, really provide. I think the backcourt looks good right now. I think that's solid. You need a scoring wing and with some, you know, veteran savvy, and that's Addie Brown. You add Trigger and it changes everything. You could play her alongside Sienna Betts. They could do the high-low. Tamia Gardner can come in, play with her. I mean, you've got so many options. She would fit in really well. She likes to step out and shoot, even though, I mean, she does hang around in the paint, but she is a threat on the pick and pop and just spotting up from the outside. So she could stretch the court. You'd have, you know, Betts inside with her post. It would, she's kind of a roster changer. Both of those two players would, I think, catapult them into at least top 15.
Yeah.
Kind of level.
And the other commitments that we've heard, that we've seen already, are Alina Arnasalo coming back from her
sojourn
to North Carolina. She's back. She's more developed. She shot it a lot better this past season than she did her freshman year. Donovan Hunter, who I really, really like, guard from TCU. She's a very, very, very good defender, on top of, you know, being a good offensive player. And then Bonnie Diaz, the Arkansas guard / wing, who I think we talked about last week, but she rebounds the crap out of the ball for a 5'9 person. So probably looking for two more to add to that group, and definitely want some wings help / size.
So there you go.
There you go. That was comprehensive. That was long. That was everything we wanted it to be and not a little bit more. If you liked all this, you should subscribe to Bruin Report Online. $1, 4 months. This past month, Tracy, we were the fastest growing site in the On3 network. I'm not saying that much because we did just come over last month, but.
And it's all due to the pros.
It's all due to you. And then this month we are number 3 in growth in the On3 network. So we are slowly but surely, or quickly but surely, getting you all back. So it's very good to see you all, and we hope to see more of you soon.
Some of those guys are really fun, the posts. So I went to the site, hadn't been for a while. And I looked around and I said, what is this? Where are Dave and Tracy? That one post was great.
So good.
I found my way here. Oh my God. Yeah, that was great.
We missed you and we're glad you're back. All right. Well, for Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Brewing Apart Online, and we will talk to you again next time.
See y'all later.